thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio. On RNIB Connect Radio. Sweet
Caroline. Neil Diamond with Sweet Caroline. Thank you so much for joining me on the happy hour. It's Paulina here, keeping you company for the next little while as we chat all things happiness, well-being, and, you know, just looking after ourselves. Now, we will have a great conversation today coming up with Charlotte Armitage. She is a psychotherapist, a registered psychotherapist, and she'll be telling us how reaching a state of calmness can really, really help boost our well-being. We'll also be hearing about a lovely befriending service from RNIB and how it's connected to old friends. And probably one of my favorite ones, a little bit about fitness and, you know, just looking after our body as we hear about a great fitness resource called Kane and Able Fitness. So all of that plus great music, including Ruffus and Chaka Khan with Ain't Nobody. So stick around, enjoy the show, enjoy the music, dance along, and you know what? Just keep me company. Oh, doesn't this just make you want to move a little bit? Which is kind of perfect, because now on the happy hour, we'll be chatting a little bit about fitness. Well, if you are wanting to get exercising, but you're not really sure how to start, well, Evan Swerbrock has got you covered. His fitness blog, Kane and Able, is full of amazing fitness resources to get blind and partially sighted people moving and comfortable in the gym. Well, if you are intrigued, our Amelia Hilton has more.
Evan Swerbrock developed Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy shortly after graduating with a health science degree. He adjusted his own training and started a blog which grew into Kane and Able Fitness, which now shares accessible fitness information and training programs with blind and partially sighted people across the world. Evan now has a master's degree in kinesiology, is a certified personal trainer and fitness nutrition specialist, and has a trophy for winning first place in the 2019 Illinois Strongest Man competition in the 242-pound weight class. So what inspired you to first start the blog?
Well, I had started losing my sight in 2014 when I developed Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy and realized that even though I had been exercising for a long time, I was a trainer, I was working all these different jobs in the fitness industry, a lot of people still really, really doubted me and my ability to continue doing those things and didn't think it was possible or feasible or safe. And I thought if I was being doubted, even though it's something I was so passionate about and very continuously pursued, even during the progression of my disease, there was going to be a lot of people out there with visual impairments who were doubted even more. And I wanted to make sure that those people were encouraged and empowered and given access to a lot of good resources that I could develop with my education and my practical experience so that they were able to garner the benefits of exercise as well.
What adjustments did you start making as you were losing your sight and continuing to exercise?
I tried to be in the gym as consistently as possible to kind of expedite that process and help it adapt a lot quicker. And some of the key things that I did were memorizing where everything was. Before I was visually impaired, it was so easy to just look around and know which machine is where the weights tend to be. But once you're visually impaired, you have to pick up on trends of those things and then not be so flustered trying to remember. Instead, kind of using predictive algorithms in order to figure out where things are likely to be and where people are likely to be, what tends to be busy, and then being able to kind of go from there. And then tactile cues became huge for me as well. I wasn't able to just look down at the bar and know that my feet were even or that my hands were even. Instead, you had to feel those things out. So that was definitely a learning curve.
do you think, given those changes, it's changed your relationship with exercise?
As much as I don't want to, I tend to adapt different programs of mine for what's going to make sense from a setup perspective or what's going to be most likely available. Being more introspective and having these intrinsic or tactile cues and relying on them more, I definitely do that and am able to have a much better awareness of my body, how it's moving, and be able to correct my form because I focus on those cues rather than video playback or a mirror or anything like that.
Going back to the blog, what has changed about Cane and Abel Fitness since you started?
So it started out as a way to try to kind of contribute on a grander scale during COVID because it seemed like a good time. There was a plethora of time in order to take advantage of, and me and my brother decided we would get after it. So in August 2020, we started the blog, and it started out as just posting weekly articles, trying to gain some traction on social media and get the word out to more and more people. But then it has really evolved into so much more. We've been in contact with people on every continent except for Antarctica and been able to do online seminars or in-person workshops in multiple different venues. And it's only growing more.
And in terms of your own fitness and activities, is there anything specifically you're really enjoying at the moment or something you're training for?
Yeah, I actually started doing strongman about 5 years ago. I didn't even start it until I was visually impaired, and I absolutely love it. It beats you up a little bit, so I have to take breaks here and there, but I'm revving back up a little bit, trying to get some good work capacity.
What's the most challenging thing for you about doing strongman?
Overall logistics. So once you kind of get your hands on something and you become familiar with the object, especially at a contest, it's not your own equipment. You only get a couple of minutes to get used to the piece of equipment. There's a lot of odd little idiosyncrasies that'll happen, especially with strongman equipment. But for the most part, me and my wonderful support system have been able to overcome a lot of that and get used to things quickly and then be able to thrive. There's always the rare event where there's a lot of stability or hand-eye coordination or things like that. Those can be frustrating, but a lot of the typical hurdles that people would think of can actually just be thought through and then adapted.
Do you have any advice for partially sighted and blind people who want to change up their routine and exercise more?
It's just all about consistency and then doing what you can do for now. We don't need you to feel wildly uncomfortable or worry about, you know, turning into Arnold Schwarzenegger or anything, but we have dozens and dozens of articles. So I would find a program, an exercise, anything that you like, and then just start consistently doing that. We actually wrote a free gym acclimation program for the blind and visually impaired that is up on our website, and there's YouTube links with further audio description, accessible PDFs, everything for you to be able to go from complete beginner and doing nothing to getting used to a gym setting and doing many different exercises and kind of feeling out what you like from rep perspective, from an intensity perspective, and then from an exercise perspective. And then very, very importantly, these independence building tasks where you learn the important things at a gym setting, such as the order of the dumbbell racks or where the bathrooms are, where the cardio machines are.
In terms of the future, is there anything you yourself in your training or in regards to Cane and Abel that you're really excited to do?
I will be traveling back down to St. Louis in June in order to work with a wonderful group of people and the dozen young adults that they bring in every year. Really looking forward to further opportunities to do seminars or workshops all over the world. And actually this weekend, I am wrapping up recording and producing a online course for personal trainers who want to train people or have the opportunity to train people who are blind or visually impaired. So that's going to be produced in partnership with a different company, which is very exciting as well.
Where can our listeners find out more about you and access the resources that you've made?
Yes, so they can go to caneandablefitness.com. That's C-A-N-E and A-B-L-E fitness. It's a little biblical reference, plus showing that if you use a mobility cane, you're still plenty capable. And then we're on Instagram and Facebook at caneandablefitness.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Evan Swerbrock, the founder of Cane and Abel Fitness and hopefully winner of Strongman Illinois this year, for talking to us here at RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much to Amelia and to Evan. Now, he's going to come back at the end of the show to choose today's music therapy moment, and he's chosen a great track, so do stick along and listen out for it. And you know what? If you want to send me your own choice of music that you would like to share with everyone because, you know, it makes you happy or it's something really special for you and it's maybe helped you through tough times or just connects to a precious memory, it doesn't matter as long as it's important. Well, you can drop me a line. It's radio@rnab.org.uk. I would love to hear which music really means a lot to you. Now, we're going to have some Beyoncé, because why not? And joining us very shortly in the show will be Charlotte Armitage, registered psychotherapist. She'll be chatting about how we can reach a state of calmness and really support our well-being. You're listening to The Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio. Is the world bringing you down? Are you avoiding the news to protect your well-being? Well, new research shows that many of us are doing just that. And joining me now to discuss these findings and offer advice on what we can do to put news into perspective is trained psychotherapist Charlotte Armitage. Charlotte, amazing to have you on the show today.
Hello.
So, quite surprising findings, because I think we're looking at what a third of us are actually actively avoiding the news.
That's correct. So the survey, which was commissioned by Calms for Calmfulness Week, so that's Calmfulness with a K, they found some really interesting findings, actually. So they found that there's been, well, we know, a negative impact of the last 12 months of political and economic uncertainty, with one in five Brits saying that their mental health and well-being has significantly worsened in this time. But the survey also found that one third of Brits are now shunning the news to avoid news altogether because of the increased feelings of worry, nervousness and anxiety that it causes. A third of Brits believe that the news has a negative impact on the sleep, and many of them want the 10 o'clock news to be moved because of the impact that hearing it has on their well-being.
And that's the thing, if it's affecting your sleep, if it's making it harder for you to wind down at night, it will have a knock-off impact on everything else in your life, including your mental health.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. So, I mean, sleep is a bedrock of good, healthy psychological functioning. So when our sleep is off, so if we have poor quality sleep, everything's affected the next day, isn't it? We're sort of, we have a shorter temper, we're more likely to get into arguments, so our relationships may suffer, we may be less productive at work, we make different choices about what we want to eat as well. So a lack of sleep can have a really significant impact on us, and anything that's having an impact on our sleep, we need to address that, look at it, and look at ways of calming ourselves down, which, to be honest, is what this Calmfulness Week is all about. It's about finding activities that can cultivate a state of calmfulness and put our mind and body into this almost period of rest, so where we're reducing the amount of cortisol and adrenaline that's surging around the bloodstream. And that doesn't have to be sort of a big chunk of the day if we can't find that time, but starting off small with, say, 10 minutes a day, and then building up if we can, and doing something in that time that works for you to help you feel calm in that moment. And then we sort of see the knock-on benefits for our mental and physical health from there.
Well, I know you're a wealth of information, so would you mind maybe giving us some advice on what we can do to kind of get the state of calm in our lives?
Yeah, so some tips that can help us achieve calmfulness then. I mean, what I'm really keen to get across here is that we aren't saying that these things will fix everything, but what they do is give you a space to allow yourself and your mind and body to be rested. So when we're rested, we're then more resilient and able to cope with the challenges of the world around us. But when we're running on, you know, low energy, we find it harder to tolerate things, don't we? So there are various things we can do. So one of those things is adopting a mindset of gratitude. So maybe writing things down that you're grateful for in that day, I would advise having a conversation about it. So if you've got children, asking them to think about five things that they're grateful for today, and you talk about five things you're grateful for as well, because you're encouraging your children to think like that as well. So you're encouraging your children, you're interacting with your children, you're getting to know your children, and then they're getting to know you. So it's building connection, and connection is so good for our mental health and well-being as well, and for reducing our levels of stress, increasing levels of oxytocin in the bloodstream, which helps us to feel connected to people. Being kind as well to other people has been found to help lower feelings of lower stress and increase our feelings of well-being. That can just be simple acts of kindness as well. It doesn't have to be real grand gestures that might take a lot of doing. Creative activities are really good as well. So that could be anything from sort of writing, reading, drawing, painting, going to an acting class, a singing class, a movement class. It could be anything that you find. I mean, something I've done recently is making Christmas baubles with my daughter. I've done quite a lot of baking as well recently as well. You know, things like that can be, because you have to focus on what you're doing, it can really help you switch off from what's going on in the world around you. Establishing a self-care routine. I touched on this a minute ago, but if we don't have the fundamentals right, then nothing else is going to be right. So a self-care routine needs to start with the basics. So getting enough good quality sleep, eating healthily, creating distance in relationships with people who you might find toxic. So I suppose this is not classically covered in self-care, but our mental health is really a direct result of the impact of other people at either now or in our childhood. So being aware of the impact that people around us have on our mental health and well-being means we can create a boundary and distance in those relationships to a point that feels comfortable for us. Because there's lots of people in our lives that we maybe could just, you know, distance ourselves to a point where we never really speak to them. But there are also people that you can't do that with, but you might find incredibly irritating. So it might be work colleagues, it might be family members, but we need to learn, work out a way of managing those relationships healthily so they're not overbearing or overwhelming for us, or irritating, I suppose. So really getting those relationships right around us, sleeping well, eating well, and getting a bit of exercise in there. We need to get those get that routine stable and make it something that's achievable. Don't sort of create a self-care routine which then becomes a burden to do, because then that's just another thing that stresses people out. And when we talk about calmfulness as well, I know I've mentioned sort of four different things there, but something that's really simple that we can do is just sitting in silence and paying attention to the present. So away from screens, away from technology, and just sit in silence, focusing on our senses and what we can feel around us. Is a good way of helping us to just calm and detach. Because we don't get time to do that anymore, do we, Pauline? I think with the problem with phones is that we are always on, we're always accessible, people can always get in touch with us. And to be honest, it makes us feel like we can never quite relax because we're not sure what's coming. And that's not a healthy state for us to be in. We need to get to that point where we do relax. I personally think that we all need to sort of detach from our phones a little bit more than we all are at this moment. And I'm not saying I'm perfect, because I'm not. I certainly use my phone too much, but I do make a conscious effort myself to really detach myself from my phone when I can.
So what is the, I guess, number one thing that you do personally that really helps you wind down at the end of the day when you've just had a really stressful day and there's this onslaught of information that's maybe quite negative and you're trying to distance yourself from it?
I take my emails off my phone for a start, and put the phone down somewhere so I'm not carrying it everywhere. I think we get into a habit of doing that. I love candles, to be honest, and I like the sort of atmosphere that having candles on creates. That's very calming for me, especially those crackling candles when I'm just listening, because you're just focusing on the sound and how you feel. So I do things like that, but just to be, I will detach myself from work, and I must admit that I haven't always done that. So, there have been most of my adult life where work would infiltrate my weekends and my evenings, and I've become really strict about my boundaries now. So I sort of email any staff members who work for me and say, no text messages unless it's urgent on a weekend. You can email me if you want, because that's up to me whether I engage with those emails. But it's about me being stricter with my boundaries. And I would say that it's for everybody. It's about knowing what works for you and being strict with your boundaries. So for me, it is a case of saying, I'm not going to work, or I will say no to something that's work related if it's outside of working hours, because I know how vital having that space where I can decompress on an evening and a weekend is for my well-being. Otherwise, we all just burn out. And I think the problem with what happened with COVID is that the boundaries between work and home life became very blurred, because people were bringing work home, we were all working from home, so we couldn't switch off, and then that made it very hard to actually switch off, because we'd been working in the same space all day long. Whereas before we always had the distinction of go out to work, come home from work. There was that kind of geographical distinction, and with that comes a psychological distinction, and we lost that through the pandemic. And I think that has somewhat remained, because people have been remained working from home, and so we have to be quite strict about when we close the door on work, literally, and walk away from it and enter into our home lives and time with our family and our children, or our partners or our friends or whoever it is that we live with. But interacting with people face to face is something that we're not doing enough of these days, but we need to for our health.
Well, Charlotte, you've mentioned so much advice, so much great advice today, and obviously the research is quite interesting. So, is there anywhere we can go to find out a little bit more?
Absolutely. If you go to www.calmfulness.com, and that's calmfulness with a K, you can find out more there.
Fantastic. Registered psychiatrist Charlotte Armitage, thank you so much for speaking with us today and for all the amazing advice you shared. Stevie Wonder, Isn't She Lovely on the Happy Hour with Paulina today. Ah, gosh, I love this song so much. Now, we still have a couple things coming up. We'll have a music therapy moment on the show. We'll be chatting with some volunteer befrienders and hearing how two people got connected after a really, really long time through the service. So we'll be hearing that story very shortly. But before that, you do know, if you listen regularly, that I love sharing some scientific facts about happiness, or maybe some little trivia or little funny, weird tricks you can do well. One scientific fact that says it can help boost our well-being is apparently stopping to smell the roses. Well, research at Rutgers University found that floral scents trigger the brain and increase a feeling of happiness. Specifically, those in the study who are exposed to the smell of flowers were three times likelier to exhibit feelings of happiness than those who were not exposed to them. So there we go. We are heading into winter, so you might not be looking at the classic flowers, but there's lots of little winter wreaths and, those fresh Christmas trees. So I would maybe see if I can get a whiff of that and just maybe a pine cone. I feel like that really, really helps. Now we're going to have some Cher, because the music's just amazing today. And we'll be hearing about that volunteer befriender service from RNAB. Touchdown in the land of the Delta Blues, middle of the pouring rain. Put on my blue suede shoes. Cher on RNAB Connect Radio. Now it's time on the Happy Hour to learn a little bit about RNAB volunteer befrienders. Who are they? How can they help someone who maybe feels a little bit isolated? Well, our Amelia Hilton finds out, and actually through this conversation, she hears an amazing story of two people meeting again.
The RNIB telephone befriender service helps spark friendly chats between volunteers and blind and partially sighted people all over the UK. We're now joined by volunteer befriender Anne Finley and RNIB customer Shirley Hunter to hear more about the programme and their experiences using it. So, Shirley, what inspired you to sign up to the programme?
Well, when it was the pandemic, we were all very lonely. You couldn't go out. There were no place to go. Then the RNIB set up a network and they started phoning once a week on a Thursday.
And how about you, Anne?
I had company in the house. I had my husband with me and I just felt I could chat to somebody and maybe spare a bit of time, support somebody and just blather with them just because people were so lonely during the pandemic.
Were you matched up on interests or was it just that you were available at the same time?
I think we were just available at the same time. I don't think we were matched up, you know, by interest or anything like that. Maybe just got Shirley's name and give me her number and asked me to contact her.
I was very glad of it because I'm on my own. And then when Anne phoned and she discovered that I had been at the Royal Blind School in Edinburgh and it turned out we were both in the same class, and right away, I remembered who she was.
It's amazing. Of all of the people you could have been matched up with,
I know.
You two found each other. How soon did you figure out that you'd met before?
In the first call, Shirley, you remembered. I didn't.
Yes, I knew right away because Anne asked me, can you remember anybody in the class? I says, I remember everybody in the class. So I told her everybody's name. When I mentioned her name, she told me her married name and she couldn't believe that I could remember all the people. Then she couldn't remember the year she went, so I told her that. And that's how the friendship came.
Yeah, I gave you my maiden name, didn't I? You got my maiden
yes,
name.
Yes, that's right.
Is there any kind of particular thing you love to talk about together, whether that's the past and your time you spent together learning or more recent things or maybe a TV show?
We talk about everything and anything, don't we, Shirley?
Yes, anything. Anything and all things. What's in the news, grandchildren.
Yeah.
And I just tell her where I've been.
Yeah, we talk about cooking, we talk about, oh, we're fed up the day. Or
what do you feel you've gained from the programme?
I've gained Shirley as a new friend. She's not now somebody that I phone because I feel I need to phone. I phone her now because, you know, we've built up a friendship over the couple of years that we've been phoning. I've realised how lucky I was during the pandemic, having my family and my husband about me. And I think you appreciate that you've got company.
And how about you, Shirley?
Like what Anne said, I'm grateful for Anne phoning me because every night I sit here on my own. It's not just so bad during the day I can go out, but you can't go out in the dark nights on your own. And apart from that, there's no place to go. So I look forward to Anne's conversation because it's passing a bit time for me, especially when I'm on my own.
It sounds like you have built up such a lovely routine and friendship through this programme. Why would you encourage other people to sign up?
I would encourage other people to sign up because it gives you a chance to just chat to people, and I just think it's a worthwhile programme on both sides, for myself and Shirley. I get a lot out of it as well.
How about you, Shirley? Why would you encourage people to join?
Well, another person to talk to, even though they're not in the room. If you're sitting alone, you can say, well, I know that Anne phones me tonight. That'll pass a wee bit time because where can a person that's visually impaired go on their own in the pitch dark, especially if they have no transport to take them there?
What are some of the biggest changes in attitudes to and support for blind and partially sighted people that you've noticed since you first met?
What I can remember at the school, bearing in the 80s, it was typewriters, not computers.
That's right.
We had to work out tabulation and the teacher would repeat so much and then she would shout, tab, and she would lose the temper and she would shout, clear the tunes, clear it, we'll start again. She was a fully sighted woman. She didn't really understand how difficult it was for people who could not see it. We're on a computer now, you can set the tabs, it automatically does it. But we had to count out the spaces. And then she used to tell us, remember, when you go out to work, You've not to be good, you've to be better, because you're going to have some job trying to get employment.
Blacked out the keys, whether you could see or couldn't see, because
that's
we're
right.
Blacked out. So, I mean, we were real touch typists. What year was it, Shirley?
I think the end of August in 76.
Oh, my God.
And we finished in June 77. The prejudice against you was absolutely shocking. People think because you've got a sight problem that you're a pure idiot. And they don't realise that you've maybe not got your sight, but you're maybe cleverer than what they are. But they will not give you credit for it.
And I also feel now health and safety has a lot to do with maybe not employing, maybe not just blind people, but disabled people.
I can agree with that, because I wanted to work as a volunteer in a centre and they wouldn't let me do it because they said I could
let
fall over
in.
A chair, and they weren't willing to take the responsibility. And yet I've done voluntary work since I was a child, and I'm still doing it today. When I left the school, it wasn't a case of maybe I'll get a job. I had to get a job. And I wrote to nearly every company that I could think of. I even put my story on Radio Clyde, and that's how I got my job. I wanted to work to put something into society and use my brains, because I had the skills to do it. And I think it's sad how people are taking a negative attitude. They're defeated before they even start. I know it's difficult, but you've got to keep trying all the time. Please try and get a job, even if it's only a part-time job. Don't waste your life, because at the end of the day, when you get older, what have you achieved?
You get so many knockbacks, but you had to keep on pushing.
Well, thank you so much, Anne Finlay and Shirley Hunter, for joining us here at RNIB Connect Radio.
Oh, what a lovely story there. If you would like to find out more or be referred to the service, you can always call the RNIB helpline. Their number is 0303 123 999. Now we are going to take a look at today's music therapy moment, which will be chosen by the creator of Cain and Abel Fitness Block. That's coming up after Scissor Sisters and Take Your Mama. There we go. That is Scissor Sisters bringing us to the end of today's happy hour. Thank you so much for keeping me company. It's always lovely having you listen to the show, and just, you know, makes me feel less lonely. Now, if you maybe want to listen to any of these interviews again, or maybe you want to share them with someone special in your life, we do have a podcast. Just search for RNIB Happy Hour Podcast wherever you listen to them. Now it's time, of course, to have our music therapy moment, and today's special song is chosen by Evan Swerbrock from Cain and Abel Fitness.
Hi, I'm Evan Swerbrock from CainandAbelFitness.com, our fitness resource for the blind and visually impaired. And my music moment is The Entertainer by Scott Joplin. It is very near and dear to me because it is still one of the few songs I'm able to play on piano even after developing my visual impairment. And then the rest of the day, my whole family is humming along to it.
You are listening to the Happy Hour Podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you've enjoyed the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips and chat, just catch the full show on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m. with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. But for now, thank you for listening to the Happy Hour Podcast.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.